In this Friday edition, we share an interview with Melody Moore, spiritual woman for the Hoopah tribe, talking about what she has learned, talking more about our history, what she has experienced, what she hopes her students will continue to do in her life of education.
There's a lot of things that are in our histories that get overlooked in the telling. I use a lot of oral history also in my local history class, and having listened to stories of various places and times and people from my family, and then even reading stories from other places, that has helped me out quite a bit. And so you had a question, how best can we rebuild our community as we start to see there just may be a new normal coming upon us again? So I'm reminded of the stories from the Southwest in which they talk about there being four worlds. The Hopis and the Diné peoples talk about there was a first world, things went well, and then things started to go wrong, then that world ended, there was a second world, and we're on the fourth world, and we're near the end where things are going wrong again, and then there will be a new world, but it will be a painful birth between the time of the fourth and the fifth world. And in their stories, what they talk about each time is that it always gets down to just a few, a group, a small group of people who remembered the teachings of the creator beings that made the place and gave us our medicines and gave us our belief systems and gave us our ways. And the people who stick closest to remembering those and singing the songs and still doing those ceremonies and still treating each other with goodness, those are usually the seed populations for the next world. Not the greedy ones, not the ones who are forgetful of their ways. And so there's always time to remember the teachings. There's always time to go back to core beliefs, which I wouldn't even narrow it down to just Hoopa beliefs, but in each of the religions, they talk about treating each other with goodness and treating each other better than what we're seeing a lot of people treating each other like these days. And so how can we best rebuild our community is get back to the concept of a community. We're so distrustful of a lot of things nowadays, for good reason. Does that make me not trust people? No. I always give people the opportunity to do good, and giving them that opportunity is what, you know, I've been taught. And then if they mess up, that's on them, not me. But I still give a lot of people that second chance, that opportunity to always do good. And that's been hard in a lot of times, in a lot of places with different people. That's difficult, but it's always about what you've been taught and keeping that to your heart and keeping that to how you treat each other rather than responding to the behavior that somebody else gave you. A thing that I would like to also talk about in terms of when I went to go visit the Menominee. I know I had said that I visited Hawaii, and I never finished up the thought about Menominee. In Wisconsin, that tribe has a trauma-informed care system in place for its entire community. And it grew first from its education side on the reservation, and it moved outward from there to the tribe and to its UIHS branch that is in that area. And so all three entities work together using resources from Wisconsin Education Department, the tribal entities and the UIHS entities, which have three different funding sources, they all work together in this trauma-informed care plan, which was amazing when I had gone back with a group from here in our education department. I was amazed walking from place to place, entity to entity, and they were all saying the same thing, and they were all so nice, and they were all so very positive. At first, we all talked about it and said, are they putting us on? Are they all, like, are we being, like, lied to in a big group kind of a way? Because we could not even imagine that an entire community was coming together in such a way. And they made sure that they told us that that they, in our descriptions of our community, it was very similar to a place that they had been in their past, maybe about 15 years ago. And they explained the entire journey that it took to get from not working together to having a shared vision and to be working together. It is not a pie-in-the-sky idea to be doing that. And it is times like this, in this pandemic, where everybody's under stress and everybody is doing the best that they can, that we need to realize that these older ways of being and institutions that maybe have been harmful and hurtful to us, the way that they were organized in the past, we have an opportunity here to rewrite all of that and to make it more powerful and more inclusive and more community-oriented than it has ever been before. So there's also a little bit that was taught to me back in my tenure at Berkeley, game theory. If game theory is paring down what we do in life to just a few symbolic kinds of things so that we can study them better, the game continues longest amongst each other, you know, the people that are participating in game or life, when you do to the other person something that's positive and they return it, that continues, that game continues for a long, long, long time, the longest. And that's putting the concept that we want this game to continue for a long time, but not what can I get out of it, this interaction, the most, or how can I get the best, or how can I put myself first. That doesn't end out doesn't end up very well. It doesn't end up going for a long time, as does this other, where you put first the priority that you're wanting to continue the game. And so breaking it down that way, what we need to do is we need to rebuild the concept of doing for each other again. In the tribal arena, getting along with each other and making sure that all entities are best using the funding to do common goals, that is not pie in the sky. That is very doable based on what we saw from the Menominee Nation. And that's what this pandemic is bringing out amongst populations all over the globe, not just ours, but how can we help each other out? So one of the questions that you had asked also, my views, my dreams for the community in ways that pull us together as citizens and sharing a common life, which is kind of building on what we just talked about. So I traveled to Hawaii and I traveled to Menominee, Wisconsin recently. And in both places, I've seen a couple of things that I've always wanted to try to put into place here. In Hawaii, what I saw was that the Native Hawaiians were experiencing a cultural renaissance, a cultural, linguistic, spiritual renaissance. And it was kicked off by their education system that they were employing. It started with desire to want to teach more language and culture to their students, to their children, And so they started out with schools in their garages, the Punanaleo schools. And they would start out with small groups. And in order to be a part of these groups, you as a parent had to put in time. And they had enough resources to where they could make a curriculum all day long, 1 hour at a time for each subject, for one expert at a time. So, like, for example, to keep it all in Hawaiian and to keep it all so that it didn't overburden the person, they had one teacher come in for an hour for math. The next would be 1 hour for history, but it was all in Hawaiian. And then the next would be all in Hawaiian, but it would be PE. Then they would have cooking and gardening also as a piece of this. And so that's the part that allowed them to take off culturally also, is because they were starting to do plantations of their plant that they grow, that they turn into poi. I forget the name of it right now, but it's their form of, like acorns would be to us, it is the poi that, you know, they always have to eat. And so that plant, they would go to do a piece of their day at the field to make sure that they have that. Now, in researching that also, the design around that kind of made me think about our forestry and how we are sort of underutilizing our acorn trees and our other foods that are available up in the hills. Our logging practices sometimes are at odds with our gathering and our, not so much the hunting, but the gathering definitely, but the footprint that we have impacted on our hillsides is starting to make it extraordinarily hard to continue to gather a variety of things that we would have needed, not just acorns. Although the moratorium that is on the acorn tree, the tan oak tree, is a good idea that was put into place years and years ago by a former tribal council during the heyday of the logging, then that moratorium still exists, and it's what allows us to continue to have our acorn trees now, even though from a logging perspective, it's not a very marketable tree. So thinking about that, how the Hawaiians have done these plantations for their native foods, you know, why can't we do that here? Why can't we begin to take better care of our hillsides using our burning techniques to a larger degree? Why not stop the logging, since it's not necessarily a good thing happening right now? Put it aside for now. Maybe a future generation can benefit from it again, because it has created a largesse for us during this current generation, those past logging practices. I appreciate that. But I also can't help but think, when we have these large old growth Douglas fir trees heading off north to some mill site in Oregon, whose AWOC belly button tree did we just log? Which ancestor had their babies implant their belly buttons in that ceremony that we usually do after the belly button has fallen off? It's a fir tree that you're supposed to be using. So grows the tree, grows the child. And that old growth Douglas fir could have been somebody's belly button tree from one of our ancestors. I can't help but think that. So my view, my dream for my community is that we research other more sustainable ways of making a living around here, more in keeping with some of our older ceremonial thoughts, and so that we can continue to enjoy in this new world that we're creating now for our grandchildren, so that they can continue to have acorns, so that they will continue to have basket materials. of the quality or better that we have enjoyed ourselves. Salmon also. So question five, what message would you send to your students as they experience these changes in their lives? Learning doesn't just quit after high school. Learning doesn't just quit after hours, after the school door closes. I think that this is a perfect opportunity for you to look at what you're interested in, research it, read about it, pursue it, put into practice something that you have created from some of this research. For example, a lot of people are going to be gardening at this time and they're researching about how to do that. Keep reading, keep documenting this time period in journal form. It may turn out to be pieces of advice that your grandchildren are going to use. Just like I was reading the diary accounts earlier to document some of these events, so too somebody might be reading your diary in the future to figure out how to survive something that you have already figured out. So that's the message that I would have for my students. Because if we're going to come out of this more empathetic, more, and that means empathy, there's sympathy and empathy. And a lot of people understand sympathy in times of need. I feel sorry for your pain, but we need to get to empathy where I feel your pain, not just I feel sorry for your pain, but I feel the pain that you are experiencing. And I'm going to help you because it's registering in me as a physical pain too. So when we can get to that part, then we will work together like the prayer says. For a lot of these ceremonies that I do, there's a prayer for people to work together. And I will say that prayer now for everyone who's listening. Nhuong hlene sa'a naso delte. Everyone will work together in a good way for a good long time. That's a very good prayer. And so I try to learn something new every single day. And how I do that as an adult is I oftentimes read. Nobody's there to tell me or to teach the value of something that I just read or the spin that I should get from it. I have to be able to think on my own what to make of those things. And today, I can count two things that I've learned. That story about the smallpox vaccination making its way across the ocean in live bodies of orphans, and that Sherburne Cook is related to Roby.
Two important facts. Yes. Well, I'd like to make a comment on what you had said about part of your dream about bringing back the acorns and focusing on making available more acorns. And you mentioned fire on the ground, how we've been doing this practice. And I've seen it many times around, especially around our geographical areas, our mountainsides. And people are doing it and doing it really well. But a missing element that was always here were the herds of elk and deer. And they too help shape the health of the soil that provided all of the food and the gathering materials. We used fire, but we used animals. Or the animals were there for that purpose. What you need to have is large hoof prints that stomp down the earth and churn it. And you have to have animals that excrete more of their body content and value that would fertilize the soil as well and create all of these nutrients in the soil for all of the other creatures that are in life forms that are inside that dirt that makes it healthy. You have to hunt fewer animals, and we have fewer animals now than we had prior to the Europeans being here. And the higher populations, the more people we have, the less animals we have, game animals. So, and what you mentioned about the moratorium on the oak trees during the more peak times of the
of timber harvesting by the council, and they made that moratorium. I'm thinking that a moratorium on hunting would also help. The forest manager, and when I mentioned bringing back elk herds, he said they would like to go in that direction, but in order to get issued a elk, they have to have a meadow for them to live on. And that's what needs to happen. Once we have a terrain that will support them, because that's what they need. So that's why we don't have any. Roby's a good person to talk about healthy soil and the need for healthy soil. And she's also a good person to talk about putting more animals on the ground. And she's, you know, that's how we've been refurbishing the acreages that we do have right now. And she gets more of a grass harvest off of her 2 acres than anybody else in Hoopa. And most people get maybe two tons, maybe 3 tons. She gets 5 to 6 tons because she has healthier soil. And she has animals. And it's never tilled. We have perennial grasses. That's what native grasses are, is perennials.
Yes. So a couple of things. So I believe that the elk population is rebounding, just from personal experience and traveling north on 96 and encountering more. I have more encounters these days with larger herds. Recently, we were traveling back. There was a slide that we stopped at. One of the gentlemen said, "Be careful of that elk herd." We're like, yeah. We never, you know, didn't think about it too much. 2 turns down the road, sure enough, there was a large group. I would say upwards of 70 in that group.
Wow,
that crossed the road. Yes, wow. Now, the locals up there are probably having fits because they're probably eating a lot of roses and things that they may have planted around there, right? That's what they were doing, is they were in somebody's yard. Then they jetted on up the hill. But the healthier that you have of the soil, I agree, the more there is to eat year round so that they don't have to come to somebody's yard to eat the roses. So Bald Hill used to be bald, and that would have been where we would have burned and had our local herd of nearby elk kept. Now, obviously, that's subdivided into people's properties and various lands, but there are other places nearby that wouldn't be that hard to refurbish, to call them from, because there's already a large herd at Redwood National Park that they have been studying vis-a-vis these fires that they're putting on the ground. And so, yeah, they prefer the burned areas to the non-burned areas. So one more thing, and then I have to go. In regards to soils and health of soils, we had an event at the school, fish fair event 4 years ago, and there was a soil conservationist that had been invited from the Redwood National Park, and he came there to share his 30-foot tubes of soil samples that he had gotten from the park at various places. A lot of it was dry and not so very interesting, but I was taking notes, and then we got to interact with the tubes. And I walked over to one of the tubes, and I looked at the top of it, near the top, because in the 30-foot tube of soil, there was not a lot to look at up until you got to maybe the last 10 inches of the tube, and then it started to change color, and then it got to the top where I could recognize leaf mold and various kinds of trees. And I said, look at this. You got also the madrone leaf, and you got the chen oak, the Nolithocarpus densiflora. And the guy looked at me and he said, yes, and interesting you should say that, because those two trees are what have changed that entire tube from what the sample is down towards the bottom where you can't really grow anything. Changed that volcanic soil, basically, more proof of my volcano erupting theory. And you have near the top something that is producing foods for animals and for humans because of those two trees. Those two trees put large amounts of leaf litter and fruits that they grow on the trees, and that's the beginning of these other plants that grow underneath or nearby, which in the tree world, if you don't disturb that understory, you end up with miles and miles and miles of like mushrooms, medicinals that we use in a lot of our ceremonies. In the places that I gather on the reservation, the places that are in and around some of those trees that were left standing from that moratorium in previous councils, those areas have some of the best medicinals to gather for some of our ceremonies. So, yes, I think a lot about soil. I think a lot about plants and how it wouldn't take that much to get back on track with taking care of large tracts of land like we used to for our own food preservations and medicines and things that we have locally here. Someday that will happen.
Yeah, that's part of the dream.
All right. So,
okay.
But I think I pretty much said what I was going to say.
Very good. Thank you very much.
So stay safe. Wash your hands.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Every day I come home and that's the first thing we do is wash our hands.
In preparing for this, it made me go back in time to look how was this problem solved before. And this social isolation that we're doing now has been done before. It was provided for us by our land. It's also the reason why we are as intact as we are, compared to a lot of other places that experienced genocide at a more extreme level than we have. I am so thankful for that, that the land has taken care of us, and it will continue to take care of us, but we also have to take care of it. So, that the world will return to its original intent that they had for us to be here. Thank you for asking me. That means a lot.